gran amigo, Doug.
Thank you very much, Olivia, and we're going to win together on November 2nd, and I appreciate very much your kind introduction. I appreciate the great enthusiasm of my young friends, and I hope you're not missing too much school this morning, but I know you're... Well, I want to say very briefly that we're pleased to be in San Antonio. I'm pleased to be out in the sunshine. We've had snow and rain the past 2 days, and I think with the sun breaking through in the middle of the week, and the last 2 weeks of our campaign's a good omen. It indicates that things are looking up, but things are brightening up for the Republican Party, for President Ford, and that's what it's all about. We want you to go out and go to work for President Ford. If he makes it, I'll make it, so don't worry about me, but just work for President Ford. Let me say to my Mexican-American friends, and I have a great many Mexican-American friends, you're just sort of natural Republicans anyway, or should be natural Republicans, with your concern about a strong America, your loyalty to your family, your independence, your yearning for freedom and justice. And I think you fit the Republican mold, and we hope that we fit your mold. We need your help, and we're counting on a great deal of help from you in the next 2 weeks, and we appreciate that very much. I want to say just one word on behalf of President Ford. The one thing that attracts President Ford, attracts people to President Ford, is his openness, his honesty, his candor, his integrity, and his accessibility. President Ford is a man willing to listen. President Ford does listen. He not only listens, he acts. And I just suggest that we need leadership. We need compassionate, kind, honest men of integrity leading our nation. As I look at the future and look at the hopes and aspirations of all Americans, and I mean all Americans, President Ford is our best bet in November. He's the best bet for America. He offers experience. He offers leadership. And I just ask you, as my friends and his friends, above all, friends of a free America, a strong America, the leader of the free world, to go to work for President Ford these next 2 weeks. I said this morning, and I'll repeat just very briefly, I'm concerned about the defense of our nation. I think people in this area know more about the need and the reasons for strength in America than probably any other area in this country. You're concerned about our strength. You're concerned about our freedom, not just for the sake of jobs in this area, but for the sake of our leadership, and above all, for the sake of peace in the world. As I look out in the audience and I see grandparents and I see parents and I see young people, but I don't see any uniforms. I don't see anybody being dragged off to some war. And I say that because we're at peace in the world, and we're at peace because we're strong, and we're strong because we have a strong president, and that president is President Ford. So whatever your reasons might be for participating the next 2 weeks, just keep that in mind. Keep in mind that President Ford is a compassionate man. President Ford is concerned about jobs for Americans, for housing for Americans, health care for Americans. He's also concerned about inflation. He's concerned about excessive government spending that hits hard at everybody in America, on fixed incomes, but above all, the working men and women in America. So I say thank you very much. I appreciate the warm welcome. We'll see you at the victory party. Goodbye. Bye.
We're going to carry the state of Texas. Things are looking up.
As far as the speech that we make in Texas, today. Do you think, I believe you said yesterday in Kansas, that the farm vote is way down at this far along the campaign? Do you think the resignation of Mr. Butt and President Ford's veto today will have an effect on this farm vote on down to November 2nd?
Well, I don't say the farm vote's down. I just think we need to strengthen our farm vote where we ought to be strong. We're not as strong as we should be. I guess from that standpoint, it's down. We're going to carry the Midwest. We're going to carry the farm vote because farmers are taking a look at what Governor Carter said and who has influenced the Carter administration.
What do you expect Mr. Butt's resignation going to have on this?
I think it's mixed. I haven't heard any great hue and cry. Secretary Butts had some outstanding friends in agriculture. But I think the action taken by President Ford on beef imports and raising the loan rates largely offset any bad reaction.
Do you believe the Butts resignation affected any of the going negotiations with other countries at this time regarding agriculture?
Well, I don't think so. I think our export programs are moving on. It's a strong program. We've virtually tripled our exports. We've got to do a great deal more. We're concerned about cotton, of course, and we're a little alarmed at Governor Carter's statement about pulling all the troops out of South Korea. We sent a great deal of cotton over there, and who knows what Carter has in mind.
Senator, a few minutes ago, the President held a news conference and said, among other things, that he did not intend to interfere with any of the Watergate prosecution process. What prompted this from him today?
I don't know. I knew he was having a press conference. I think he just wanted to make certain the American people understand or understood that he had no role or what his role was. I don't know what he said, so it's pretty hard to comment on any details.
Senator, what earthly difference could it make when Jimmy Carter insults individuals to a man's presidential ability? For weeks you've been attacking him for criticizing Billy Graham and President Johnson and all, but yet... How does that affect his ability?
I think it says something about a man's character. He's gone around this country early on as a new breath in politics, a fresh breath in politics. Today, I guess Ladies' Home Journal had a press conference. They're coming out with another Johnson, anti-Johnson comment by Governor Carter. So apparently while he was apologizing to Lady Bird about the Playboy remark, he was talking to Doris Kearns in another interview where he insulted the late president again. I just can't, I don't think the American people be very enthusiastic about someone with a character like that.
Do you think that President Johnson was totally honest when he was president?
Oh, I don't know, but Governor Carter praises him one moment and criticizes him the next. He's just not very consistent in anything he does. Well, we'll see you all at the...
Thanks, Tom.
Nominee of the great Republican Party for Vice President of the United States. And it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome him to Lubbock, Texas, and to present him to you, the next Vice President of the United States, the Honorable Bob Dole, Senator from Kansas. Let's have it for Bob.
Thank you.
I know this audience knows a winner when you see one. And if we do as well as the Red Raiders have done, we're going to win easily on November 2nd. At number 8, and after this week, what's it going to be? Big water glasses here. I know I'm in Texas. That's really plain pineapple juice, and it's a lot better for you than peanut butter. It doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. Well, last Friday night in Houston, Texas, we had a little meeting down there, and a friend of mine named Mondale was on the program. And we think the debate came out all right or whatever it was, but I picked up a little cold standing there in the draft for 75 minutes. It wasn't the cold air that got me, it was all the hot air coming from that side. I see some different posters here. I hadn't seen the one with the smile and the X. Let me say, first of all, it's an honor and a privilege to be here. And I'm very proud to be Texas Tech and very proud to be in Texas. I said this morning in San Antonio, I guess last night in San Antonio, and before that in Corpus Christi, that we are going to carry the state of Texas because Texans are very discerning voters. Now, I know in this audience there are probably Democrats and Republicans and Independents and probably some who came to the wrong meeting, but in any event... I want to talk to you about politics just for a few moments because we don't have many days left, and I won't bore you very long. For some time, I've been discussing Mr. Carter's disagreeable habit of smearing prominent Americans for whatever curious political purpose might pop into his mind. And after he achieves his political purpose, he apologizes to the victim. In the case of President Johnson, he apologized to Mrs. Johnson, of course. But I've been saying that his apologies are worthless, about as worthless as his political promises, which he begins by explaining 3 different ways and ends by denying he ever made it all. And you'll recall what he said about President Johnson in Playboy magazine. Maybe if you haven't, if you don't take it, maybe you've borrowed a copy, but they're very hard to get. When he said in Playboy magazine that former President Johnson was a liar and cheat and distorted the facts, he first tried to blame it on the editors, but that didn't work. So he said he didn't mean what his remarks, didn't mean his remarks that way. They didn't really come out the way he thought, and he finally apologized to Mrs. Johnson. And through the whole unhappy affair, Mr. Carter had a little secret. The little secret was that while he was apologizing to Mrs. Johnson and swearing he never intended to dishonor the late president's name, was that he had also given an interview to Doris Kearns in the Ladies' Home Journal in which he made similar statements about President Johnson. And Ladies' Home Journals, I understand, just announced today about this latest interview of Governor Carter's. Now, Miss Kearns has made her own little career out of talking about President Johnson, and I'm certain she and Mr. Carter must have had much to talk about. She interviewed him for Ladies' Home Journal, and for some reason, It will be printed. It hasn't been printed yet. But sure enough, Carter found a way to slip in a gratuitous, unkind remark. And typically was right in the middle of a discussion about how his religion made him a wonderful fella and gave him an edge over others. And I quote what he said in that interview. Governor Carter said, "For unlike Lyndon Johnson, the man you know so well," Carter tells Kearns, "I feel sure about myself deep inside. Johnson never felt secure inside, especially around the Eastern establishment, the professors, experts, writers, and media people. And that's why they got him in the end. But I don't feel ill at ease in a Harvard professor's house, or when I'm talking with the experts on foreign policy or on economics, when I'm the leader of any group. And with that Alice in Wonderland quality, which is part of his charm," he goes right on to say, "the point is that I'm not comparing myself with any of them. To judge our own goodness or sinfulness by comparison with other men is wrong." Now, so much for the value of Mr. Carter's apologies and his contrition over being unkind to others. The man who trots out all his soft words in praise of President Johnson, and in the back of his mind he knows full well that he is on the public record somewhere else making unpleasant remarks about the man while he's apologizing to his widow. And I would just suggest that instead of passing out campaign buttons, Carter ought to pass out notes of apology. They'd be a more fitting symbol of his campaign, and they'd have about the same value as a campaign button. And so I would guess today when the Ladies Home Journal article is published, you'll have another call from Plains, Georgia, to Mrs. Johnson somewhere in Texas saying, "Well, I'm sorry once again. I won't do it anymore." I wonder how many more interviews are lurking around that we haven't uncovered, or how many have been covered up. And I just say it indicates to me a pattern. You may know people. You may know other students. You may know other people who take great delight in finding fault with others, and then on second thought rush to apologize. Well, that may have some merit, but I don't think it really builds friendship. Tells you something about that person who's so harsh on everyone else and so quick to judge everyone else but never finds fault with himself or herself. And so I just suggest at the outset we should take a good, cold, hard look at Governor Carter. We're going to carry the state of Texas. We're going to carry Lubbock County, Texas. We're going to carry Texas Tech. Don't know where to start because I'm generally very quiet and calm about the campaign. I am very serious about the campaign. It's very serious business we're about to undertake on November 2nd. We're talking about the future leadership not just of America, but of the free world. And I think, let me tell you just what I mean. We've been on a number of college campuses. I think this must be number 9 or 10 in the past few weeks. It's been almost fantastic to me to see the change in attitudes of young people. And oh yes, we've had some Carter fans in the audience, and they've been very nice. They've waved their banners, and some have spoken a few words. They didn't really want to be for Carter very much. But I say there's been a change on the campuses across this country. There's been a change in America. There's been a change in American leadership. And we have in the White House now a man who's compassionate, kind, honest, decent, accessible. He's there now, and he's going to be there 4 more years. His name is President Ford. Now I want to touch on just 2 or 3 things that I think might be of interest. I think most young Americans, whether they're whether you may be Democrats or Republicans or Independents or whether you just haven't made a decision, are concerned about the strength of America. Oh, yes, the moral strength of America, the moral strength of America's leaders. You're also concerned about the real strength of America, the military strength in the proper way, the military strength that leads us to peace and continues peace. And I want to talk about that just for one moment. I know in the state of Texas, there's a great deal of concern about our defense budget. There's a great deal of concern about our defense posture. Oh, yes, some's based on jobs. Some's based on the proximity of an air base or an army base or some other base. But for the most part, the concern is how do we maintain peace in the world? What role does America play? Well, one thing that's gratifying to me as I travel from campus to campus and state to state and city to city, unless you have an ROTC program or unless there's some reserve unit somewhere, or some National Guard unit, you don't find many young men or many young women in uniform about to take off from some distant place or some far-off country to fight some battle or fight some war without knowing the cause or the purpose. And in America today, we don't have any memorial services in Lubbock, Texas, or my home state of Kansas for some young American who's been killed, or we're not sending someone to the hospital, someone who's been badly wounded. And my point is that we're at peace in the world. We're at peace in the world largely because we're strong in America, because we're respected by our friends and our adversaries overseas because of our strength. And in large part, this is due to the great leadership of President Ford. I think America's young people have a way of seeing through those of us in politics, those who may be in business or agriculture or whatever. You're a curious lot. You want to know about our stands on the issues. You want to know whether we're real or imaginary, whether we're just spewing out so much political rhetoric, concerned about the election. Well, I promise you this. We make no promises we cannot keep. President Ford promises continued open government, continued candor, continued confidence, and he brings to the office of the presidency 20-some years of experience. He brings that office more than 2 years of leadership as President of the United States, and that means a great deal to all Americans. And so I say, yes, the first issue in this campaign is peace and strength. Peace at home and strength at home, and therefore peace in the world and hope for the free world, whether it's the Mideast or wherever it might be. And above all else, if I had some doubt in my mind, if I was sort of leaning towards Carter one day and Ford the next day and undecided the next day, I would take a long, hard look. If I was a mother or grandmother or father or grandfather or some young man who doesn't want his schooling interrupted, who doesn't want his work interrupted if he's not in college, who's concerned about his future, I tell you the best hope lies with experience and lies with tested leadership and lies with a man who's visited some 14 countries and some 100 and some foreign leaders, someone who knows the problems. And that's what it's all about. And I would tell the young men in this audience very quickly who are concerned about agriculture. I know a little about agriculture. I served on the House Committee for 8 years. I'm now on the Senate Agriculture Committee, where I'm the ranking Republican on that committee. I think we have basically a sound program. For the first time in a long, long time, the past 8 years,
We've been moving and moving and moving to get the government off the farmers' back, and we've made progress in that. And I don't want to stand here and criticize the other side. I could. I might. I probably will. But I want to go back to the years of Orville Freeman when he was Secretary of Agriculture. You were very young then. Your dad may have told you about it. But I'll pick out one specific crop, which isn't the greatest crop in this part of Texas, but let's take corn. They raise some in my state. They raise some in your state. They raise a lot in Nebraska and Iowa. But corn prices were never very high in those days, $1.08, $1.05, $1.04. And every time they would start to rise a little bit, Secretary Freeman always found what he called, quote, out of condition, end quote, corn, which means it had to be sold before it was spoiled, which really meant he wanted to sell it to keep the prices down, and he did that. He sold millions and millions of bushels of out-of-condition corn. The net result was to keep the market stabilized. Well, in my state, stabilized farm prices mean low farm prices. And that's the kind of policies we had under the last Liberal Democrat administration. Now, what's Governor Carter have in mind? What's Senator Mondale have in mind? A lot of things he has in mind, but what do they have in mind for agriculture? One thing they have in mind is a grain reserve. They say, well, it's going to be half held by the farmers and half held by the government. I don't like it. American farmers don't like it. American farmers want freedom. They don't want government-held reserves that can be used to depress market prices or compete with them in the marketplace, and that's just what grain reserves would do. We're opposed to grain reserves. Senator Mondale has introduced legislation along with Senator Humphrey and others in that of that persuasion, liberal persuasion, which would establish a system of export licenses. If the stocks got below a certain figure, you'd have to have an export license, which would in effect be legislative embargoes. And we've had enough embargoes in this country, too, whether it's under President Ford or anyone else. And I think that'll be right. But President Ford has indicated very clearly there'll be no more embargoes unless in extreme cases. But along comes Senator Mondale, and it's in the Democrat platform. They're going to require export licenses if the supply of wheat gets below a certain amount, domestic supply. Let me tell you another thing about their policies. Who has the influence in that administration? The farmers in Texas? No. The farmers in Kansas? No. The influence in that administration, the greatest single influence in that administration, has initials GM. That's not General Motors. It's George Meany. George Meany. They once asked Meany why he didn't run for president. He said, why step down? He's got a pretty good grip on the Democrat Party now, the Liberal Democrat Party. And I assume many Democrats here, I assume there are many Democrats here, but you probably have a moderate to conservative philosophy. Just let me tick off two or three things of where we agree or where we disagree. First of all, let's take gun control. Some here may be for it. If you are, then take a look at the Carter Mondale platform. They're for it. They've said they're for it. The Ford Dole platform and President Ford and Bob Dole are against it. So that's one difference. Let's move on to right-to-work legislation. That's Section 14B of the Taft-Hartley Law. They want to do away with it. They want to take away that voluntary right that working men and women have to belong or not to belong to a labor union. Mondale wants to repeal that. He wants to force you to belong to a labor union. So does Governor Carter. Of course, so does George Meany. President Ford wants to keep that right. He wants to keep your right to work law in the state of Texas, and so does Senator Dole. And that's another difference. Probably another area that doesn't affect you here. But again, it tells you the kind of a philosophy you're going to have. Forced busing. We're against it. They're for it. And that's another basic difference.